Thanks so much. We have a tight schedule, so I'll go directly to the subject. I'm coming from Porto, Portugal. This is our institute. I'm highlighting this because this is a fantastic environment where pathologists can put together what they do in diagnosis with research, and where we try to have ideas growing, not always easy, but anyway, it's a challenge. And when you address gastric cancer, the first thing you should be aware is that we have sporadic and hereditary. Sporadic accounts for 90% of the cases, hereditary 1 to 3%, so in the middle we'll still have the familial cancers that we'll not approach. Of course, if you want to treat cancer, you have to take attention to the precursor lesions because it's the early diagnosis that will give you the chance just to treat the patients. And what I'm going to do today is to address very briefly gastric carcinogenesis in what concerns H. pylori, morphological and molecular features, hereditary gastric cancer, and a tentative global picture. If you come to carcinogenesis, all of us are aware that there is a long pathway from when we have a normal gastric mucosa until the moment we developed advanced cancer. And this pathway that was presented by Pelayo Correa describes only part of gastric cancers. This will lead to the designated intestinal type of gastric cancer, which is insufficient today, as I will try to demonstrate. In this long pathway, I want to highlight here today not only the role of H. pylori, and it's a huge amount of information we have collected today regarding the role of H. pylori in gastric carcinogenesis, but also along the pathway in which you have superficial gastritis, chronic inflammation, atrophic gastritis, and a certain step you have intestinal metaplasia. But what is highlighted in this scheme is that you can have not only intestinal metaplasia, but SPAM. I want to highlight this because this is a kind of gastric metaplasia that we are convinced may play a role in gastric carcinogenesis. The challenges today regarding H. pylori and its role in the development of gastric cancer is confronted with the knowledge that is being accumulating regarding now microbiota. So in the stomach you can have hundreds, thousands of different qualities, strains of bacteria. And what is prevalent in a specific stomach depends on the presence of H. pylori. If H. pylori is there, it dominates the microenvironment. If it is not there, the microenvironment can be very heterogeneous regarding microbiota. And the consequences of having microbiota or with or without H. pylori is now under research, and it is still too early to come to conclusions. But what we know is that this is becoming so relevant that the so-called European Helicobacter Study Group recently changed the name for the European Helicobacter and Microbiota Study Group. So there is much to learn from here. If you come now to gastric cancer, sporadic gastric cancer, advanced sporadic gastric cancer, this is extremely heterogeneous, and you can have polypoid lesions, you can have fungating lesions, you can have ulcerated lesions, you can have wildly infiltrative lesions. So this is a huge heterogeneity already at the macroscopic level. If you come now to the microscopy aspects of gastric cancer, you have the tumors in which you have a glandular structure. This can be tubular, can be papillary. On the other side, you can have tumors that are poorly cohesive. They do not adhere to the cells. They do not constitute glands. You still have the tumors in which there is accumulation of mucus, and this constitutes a mucinous type of gastric cancer. And still, to make things more complicated, we have the so-called mixed gastric cancer. And in these mixed gastric carcinomas, ecadrine expression has played a very important role to identify that in the same tumor, you can have a glandular component together with an area in which the cells are poorly cohesive. So all this I'm mentioning is encompassed today in the current classification of gastric cancer according to WHO that was issued in 2010, in which you can see the different subtypes of gastric cancer. And as a pathologist, I have to emphasize this. not only those variants we knew already, but also what we call today to the previously described as signaturing that should be diagnosed as poorly cohesive and adding signaturing if this is a predominant feature that is not obligatory to be present, and highlighting also the role of mixed carcinomas, which I highlight here because I think it has a strong impact in what we are so much interested in today, which is molecular classification. If you come here to the simplified classification of gastric cancer according to Loring's classification, we can put together all the tumors in which there are glands, and this corresponds to the so-called intestinal carcinoma between inverted commas, because I do not like this name actually, and we have the diffuse carcinoma, and this is a problem, and this is a problem for clinical trials, because the better definition of what diffuse carcinoma is really urgently need for the interpretation of clinical trials. These two major variants, they have different pathogenic mechanisms which are extremely easy to understand, because here there is adhesion, and in the diffuse type of gastric cancer, there is loss of adhesion. So as you would expect, the major mechanism involved in the so-called diffuse gastric cancer, poorly cohesive, according to WHO, is something that affects adhesion. And CDH1 gene encoding for ecadherin is the major target of this process and plays a major role in diffuse gastric cancer. But let's concentrate for a while on the so-called intestinal, in which major changes encompass ER2 gene and microsatellite instability. Everybody in this room, I'm absolutely sure, is aware of the role of ER2 in gastric cancer, besides breast cancer and other models. We identify overexpression with amplification in about 20% of the cases. The problem is the prognostic and meaning of this change, and there is a lot of debate in the literature. In our hands, overexpression of ER2 is related to poor prognosis and related to bloodborne metastasis. It's not the experience of everybody in the world. We have tested this in small and large series and confirmed, and everybody knows that ER2 is the target of, or is a biomarker for target therapy. This was the first clinical trial. We know much more about this than I do, and is still under evaluation. And if you come now to the molecular features, you have to be aware that besides ER2 that is amplified in gastric cancer, and these results come from the Singapore study group, it was demonstrated there are other genes that can be amplified in gastric cancer. And the interesting thing of this is that when we have one of these genes amplified, you do not have the others. So these changes, they are mutually exclusive. The other genes would be KRAS, fibroblast growth factor receptor, epidermal growth factor receptor, and MET. This is very interesting, and we don't know exactly why this happens. As I mentioned, microsatellite instability is a feature of a percentage of gastric cancers, something like 20%. In sporadic gastric cancer, that's what I'm talking about, is due to the methylation of MLH1, and the patients carrying tumors with microsatellite instability, they have a better prognosis expressed in overall survival. This is well known already since years. I'm highlighting this because it's important for some of the conclusions. But if you now look at gastric cancer, not from the angle I've been looking, which is quite classic, the morphology, the major types, the major changes, but if you now look to gastric cancer from a different angle, and this is differentiation, and I'm referring to differentiation as gastric differentiation or intestinal differentiation, you know that in gastric cancer with glandular structure, that according to Loring's classification, we designate as intestinal type of gastric cancer. Actually, if you study cell differentiation, in a proportion of cases, what we identify is gastric differentiation with expression of gastric mucins, while in the proportion of cases they have intestinal differentiation without the expression of gastric mucins. This occurs quite early in carcinogenesis because if you study dysplasia, you can identify already that there are a group of dysplastic lesions in which there is gastric differentiation. This would be, in my mind, the precursors of gastric cancer with gastric differentiation, while other types of dysplasia, they have intestinal phenotype. Why is this relevant? If you come again to molecular pathology and you try to put things together, what I'm showing you now is an expression profiling study coming also from the Singapore group. I don't want you to get lost, please, but what these authors have done was to study the expression profile of a large series of cases of gastric cancer, and this was confirmed in a second series, and identified three profiles, the so-called mesenchymal, the so-called proliferative, and the so-called metabolic. We don't go into details, just to let you know that the mesenchymal corresponds to the diffuse type of gastric cancer, the proliferative corresponds to the intestinal type of gastric cancer. What I like in this study is the metabolic subgroup. Why? Because in this metabolic subgroup, there is the expression of genes encoding for proteins involved in normal gastric mucosa. According to these authors, this subgroup would be sensitive to 5-FU, would have an implication for your clinical practice. And because among the different genes that are expressed in this subtype of gastric cancer, there is SPAM. You remembered my first slide that highlights SPAM metaplasia, which is a type of gastric metaplasia. This tells me that this metabolic group most probably corresponds to gastric cancer with gastric type of cell differentiation. Is this relevant? Not much for clinical practice, I don't know. It is really important for understanding because my reading today of this data is that in the pathway of gastric carcinogenesis, there is a certain point in which you have a bifurcation and you have cases that through intestinal metaplasia will go to adenocarcinoma intestinal phenotype, most probably the proliferative genotype, and you have the case that through SPAM metaplasia will go to adenocarcinoma with gastric phenotype, most probably what I've been describing or the authors have described as the metabolic genotype. And we come obligatory these days to this model. I think that everybody in this room will be talking about gastric cancer, will show this, but today we are privileged because we have the first author. He will give the keynote lecture, so it's a privilege to have him today. And I like very much this model. I like very much why. Because what this classification demonstrates, the so-called molecular classification of gastric cancer, is that you have four major types. These major types, they have been designated as SIN. It stems from chromosomal instability. Look at the histology of these tumors. The histology of these tumors is intestinal type of gastric cancer. So it corresponds to what we pathologists describe as intestinal tumors. The other type of molecular subtype is genomic stable. Look at this. It's diffuse histology. We pathologists, we knew already there was this type of gastric cancer, and we know already there is a disturbance in cell adhesion, and you have microsatellite instability, which also have specific morphological features. So what I like here is that using big data, the most sophisticated methodology, they came up to a grouping of gastric cancer based on molecular features that reflects what we see in morphology. And I like it very much. I think it's very comprehensive and very useful for our understanding of gastric cancer. Still, we have this group that is Epstein-Barr related group that is becoming extremely important because of the overexpression of PD-L1, because of the interference with the immune checkpoint, and because of the immune cell signaling. So this is very important. What we pathologists are we left with this classification? We are in the hands of molecular pathologists. They will give us the molecular data. In a way, yes, and we need that for the future, for the better understanding. But please be aware that we have in our hands tools that will help us to categorize gastric cancers in our diagnostic routine according to these molecular groups. This is a model that comes from Boston. The senior author of this paper is Gregory Lowers, a very good friend of mine. So we can detect expression of EBV. Yes, we can. We can identify microsatellite instability. Yes, we can. Can we detect the aberrant expression of ecadrin? Yes, we can. What are we left with? We are left with the so-called chromosomal instability cases in which we can still distinguish, according to the Asian group of gastric cancer, two different subtypes, which are the P53 positive and negative. But if you now look at what is presented by, for instance, the group of Patrick Tan on the different molecular subtypes of changes in gastric cancer, you get terrified. What are you going to do with this huge amount of information? And I come to this paper published by Andrej Cervantes here in the room. Is the personalized treatment of gastric cancer really a myth, or will it become a reality? I think these days, what has been translated to clinical practice is target therapy directed to HER2 or target therapy directed to vasculoendothelial growth factor receptor type 2. And what we are left really, and really promising, I think, is the interference, the blockage of the immune checkpoint. So we are talking about PD-L1 in gastric cancer. We are talking about PD-L1 in gastric cancer in EBV-related tumors. We pathology, we can detect the expression of EBV. We can detect the expression of PD-L1. You can also detect microsatellite instability. And these are the two groups of gastric cancers in which the immune checkpoint blockage seems to be operative with good results for the patients. What I'm talking is about getting the blockage of the interference of PD-L1 that can be expressed by tumors and PD-1 in lymphocytes. If you break this linkage, you reactivate the lymphocytes and your own T cells treat your gastric cancer. And this is something that comes from the group of Dr. Adam Bass on the possibility of figuring out the difference between EBV positive and negative cases. I'm sure we'll address this later. Let's jump very briefly, to hereditary gastric cancer, just to tell you that we have two major types. We have hereditary diffuse gastric cancer, currently acknowledged and described in WHO book, 2010. It is described the morphology. We have intermucosal lesions. We have intraepithelial precursor lesions, pashtoid spread or signet ring cell carcinoma. So we know a lot of morphology. What we do not know is what makes gastric cancer of hereditary type that stays indolent for long, all of a sudden to become aggressive. So what we are currently studying is the biological markers that can be behind the aggressiveness of those cases that will become aggressive and kill the patients. We have some results, will be published soon. What we know also is that besides ecadrin, there are other genes such as the gene encoding for ecatenin, and more recently a bunch of other genes that can give exactly the same clinical expression of hereditary diffuse gastric cancer. But this is not all, because we know only the genetic reasons behind hereditary gastric cancer, and something like 50% of the cases, we are still left with a huge amount of families for which the genetic cause is not identified. And you have a second type of hereditary gastric cancer. In this one, there is a polyposis syndrome, and the tumor is not a diffuse, a signet ring cell carcinoma, but is intestinal type. What we have in the middle, these polyps are fully gland polyps. They express dysplasia, and they become malignant. This was described in 2012 by the group led by someone in Australia and also by a group in Japan. People have been dedicated to the search of the genetic cause for 4 years, and it was only this year that the genetic cause was identified, and this is caused by a mutation in exon 1b of the APC gene. APC, the gene that causes familial polyposis in the colon, that became now extremely challenging. And this is my understanding of the pathology of these syndromes. So you have the APC gene, which is a long one. If you have mutations in this hotspot in exon 15, what we get is severe familial pneumatous polyposis with a phenotype in the colon. Everybody knows about that. If you have at the extremities, the phenotype many times is attenuated familial pneumatosis. And you can have the phenotype not only in the colon, but also in the stomach, if the mutations occur in the promoter gene 1B, the phenotype the patients will display is GAP syndrome. So we should be aware it is our responsibility, everybody in this room, just to contribute to new families, new cases for a better understanding. So we have two types of hereditary gastric cancer, the hereditary diffuse and the so-called GAP syndrome. And if you want to put everything together, and this is really oversimplified, you have gastric cancer of the intestinal type, sporadic and hereditary. You have gastric cancer of diffuse type, sporadic and hereditary. Of course, there are, well, many people behind. I cannot thank to all of them. This group, several places in the world. It has been a pleasure to contribute, collaborate with all. And thank you for your attention. This is Porto.